each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. It's lunchtime, it's Winds of Change time, and Tony, you know what that means?
Yep. Brain
wrinkling time.
This is kind of unsettling, though, that you're right next to.
It's a little. We're having some. Nick's got us going.
That's all that matters.
So the people out there could care less about what problems we have inside the studio, but they want to hear. They want their brains wrinkled.
Exactly.
You don't tune into Winds of Change unless you want your brain wrinkled. I find that it's delightfully tickling. You know, God gave you a brain, so you might as well have it tickled.
You know, it is kind of funny, though, because I think most people, when you think about it, they don't know the feeling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And once you get a brain wrinkling, you kind of enjoy, you want more.
You want more, exactly.
It hurts at first.
Kind of like that butterfly before he tests out his wings.
There you go.
You know, you've been crawling around on your 100 legs. Mm-hmm. And then finally you got wings and you get to use them. Or someone with a great voice, you know. You discover that you can sing and then you want to sing. So, but we all have a brain. We all have minds.
Most of us do.
Yeah, that's true, Faye. But I know all of our listeners are supercharged with this gift of... anyways, my friends, if you remember from last week... As you left, as we left the same bat channel at the same bat time, that's going back to a little bit from my 70s.
I've been watching that series too, as well, the old Batman series from 1966. So it's funny you should say that.
The best.
Those are better Batmans than the movies today. You know, the movies are also dark, and they never. Did you ever notice that a lot of movies today are shot at nighttime?
Yeah,
I just. Go to a movie, and I say, okay, more nighttime. It's got to have something to do with how cheap it is to rent space in a town or a city.
Most people are sleeping at that time. So.
And so, yeah, so a movie crew says to the town, we want to shoot a movie on Main Street. Well, you can do it between midnight and 4 a.m., and it'll be such and such a month. Anyways, so, but the brain-wrinkling theme that I need us to continue is the very important theme of religious freedom. And actually, as we get close to the 4th of July, I want everyone to be praying for a spirit of religious freedom in our nation. Like all other freedoms, it can be choked. But I want to take it even a step further. I want to take it a step further and say, let us... analyze, what does freedom really mean? What does religion really mean? What is religious freedom itself? I'm afraid there's some ambiguous, cloudy, foggy, strange ideas. How's that what I said? And if you remember last week, I shared, and it's very difficult for me to do this because... most people know, well, I have some heroes in my life, and I've shared with you a number of my heroes, and sometimes I comment or critique some of my heroes. people I know and love and admire, but I will still, what I like to say is I will just continuing a dialogue with them. I feel I do it with the Pope. I feel I do it with bishops, fellow priests, other theologians, politicians, and all the rest. And so I'm going to do it with a radio hero of mine, at least because Dennis Prager sponsors something called Prager University. And there was a episode of Prager University. They're only 5 minutes, and I really recommend you check them out.
Yeah, it's on YouTube?
It's on YouTube. You can find it on YouTube.
There's somebody else that's on YouTube, too.
That would be The Winds of Change.
Oh, aside from...
And Unlike Other Nations.
Unlike Other Nations.
Yes. Those of you who especially love the brain wrinkling of Wednesdays, you have to subscribe to Unlike Other Nations. That's my own little special YouTube channel. I'll be popping out more.
There you go.
I got to do a couple. It's been a couple of weeks since I've popped one out.
That's what I'm talking about.
There is. That's it. It's the reward room. Do I get the reward room, Nick? Is that part of what it is?
That's everything.
Indeed. Okay. So anyways, what I'm doing is I'm taking an American historian, a historian who I think is a very good historian. I like reading the parts of what he's written because he tells the stories of the past without an agenda of trying to get me to hate America. I want to love the land that I live in, and there's enough bad in front of my own nose that I want to know the warts and all, as it were, but I also want to know that it's not all just warts. I want to know that there's good virtue to be found as we look back in the past. So that being said, the historian that I'm going to comment on is Larry Schweikart, and many people might know him because he's made somewhat of a name for himself in his writings. He has a book out called A Patriot's History of America, which I do highly recommend. But as he becomes a theologian, I feel I can debate with him on my turf. I don't know that he fancies himself a theologian, and I would be I have to be very humble to declare myself one, but I think I'm at least more on solid ground as I try to talk about theology. And by the very nature of the topic of religious tolerance, you're going to bring in theology. Does that seem logical? Does it seem fair?
So yeah, I think so.
Maybe Nick, we could. There we go.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Stop reading
the
my
first
mind.
One. If we do the, yeah, that's right. Let's start with. Can you see number one? Let's just set it up. He starts the little episode just by talking. Well, let's hear what he says. Okay.
Indeed, America is known for religious tolerance. In fact, it is not an exaggeration to say that America, where people of all faiths are free to worship or not worship as they please, invented modern religious tolerance.
Okay, that's the theory, that's the theme, that's the proposal on the table. Number one, America invented religious tolerance. I want to say America used religious tolerance in some very good ways, but it didn't invent it. I have to say he's wrong in that it existed before, and I want to illustrate how really Catholicism is a tremendous proponent of religious freedom, contrary to what so many people say and think. So let me just throw this at you because... You know, this may not be a theme that you think about too much, but what are some of the basic ideas when the theme of religious tolerance comes up? What are some of the...
What do you think about?
...ideas that come to your mind?
That we're supposed to respect everybody and everything is relative.
Oh, you had two. Yeah, that second point.
Mm-hmm. It's all the same.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. That's what it's coming to mean. And I'm glad you put it out that way. I think we can just end the show now because that's sort of the conclusion.
Your God is my God. It's all the same. Everything is the same.
Yeah. And the tremendous passion for those who are against religion stems from a deep-seated belief that religion is the cause of great problems. And therefore, to have a better society, you remove the cause of the problem. You remove the cancer. When religion is seen as the cancer, then you have to
remove it.
And therefore, today's world, we have greater variety of religions than at the beginning of the United States, especially vis-a-vis Muslim world. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a part of the program, as it were. But that changes something very, very radically in the sense that America began with a sense of tolerance amongst Christian religions, especially Protestant Christian religions. And it's very important to recall that Catholic Christians were not tolerated at the beginning. But Catholic Christians were tolerable and tolerant, and we won over our adversaries by being really nice, I guess you could say.
These guys are really nice.
These people are really nice. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people like to marry one.
Mm-hmm.
The men that found a really nice Catholic girl, they felt blessed, and you know, but without getting. So, let's. I started putting down last week, as is often the case. I jumped here and there.
These are good. This is good.
That's the way. So putting it down on paper helps to focus.
Yeah.
So, I'm gonna have to focus our attention by. Giving a little commentary here. So
okay.
You raise your hand, you say, stop, or wait a minute, what do you mean by that, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Here's how. It's just about a 10-page document here in my hand. It should be. This will take us the next month or something. Yes, exactly. So, but anyways, here goes. Friends, today I want to focus on something I heard on a Prager University clip called Religious Tolerance. Made in America. You can find the link to that video in YouTube. Prager University is the brainchild of one of my radio heroes, Dennis Prager. And it's a great popularizer of conservative ideas in easy to understand 5-minute clips. The fact that they're short is one of the reasons they're so appealing to a huge audience. They have millions of clicks, as it were. And they distill an interesting argument or a critique of an argument into bite-sized episodes that are well done and easy to understand. But there's another side to that brevity. Sometimes they leave things out. And I'm afraid that when it comes to European religious history, this video on religious tolerance in America leaves out a lot. The video also reveals a faulty but very common mode of thinking that many Americans, both on the leftist side and on the right side, the liberal and conservative side, have in common. Does that give you, you know where we are?
I'm following you.
You're following? Yeah. That's good. Okay, but let me throw this out before I get to the next little paragraph here, because when I say religious history in Europe, Tony, what comes to your mind? Religious history in Europe. It's the first where we'll play that psychology game, you know, pretend you're laying on the couch. Hey, we do have a couch over there. You could lay down.
Yeah.
Everything.
Feel comfortable. Religious.
Religious history in Europe. Boom. What's the first word?
History. <Yeah.
laughs> Some people might say fighting.
Fighting.
That might be it, right? I don't know. I don't want to say that. I'm going to say, Nick, do you have a first word that would come to your mind? If I say religious history in Europe, what's the first word that comes to your mind? Go.
Let's see.
Fighting for 100, please.
Fighting for...
Catholic disagreements?
Okay. No, there's no wrong, because I asked you your first thought, and that's what... You want to know mine?
Yes.
You want to know mine?
For 500.
For 500? Yes. It goes way down there for 500. Catholic, religious history in Europe. Unificator.
Unificator.
Unificator and Christianizer. It was what Christianized. And then comes the division, and then comes the fighting, and then comes the battle. But to me, it has a huge history. To most people in America, its history is short. Hmm. And that history basically starts in the 1500s. But if you know how to count from 0 to 1500, there are 1500 years before 1500.
Nice.
And there's only 500 years after 1500, all right?
And we're talking at this point all the kings and all the...
All the kings, all the popes, all the bishops. There were definitely fights. There was definitely struggles. But I'm just going to throw that out. Unifier, Christianizer. Okay, Nick, you want us to take a little break here, don't you, so we can keep on going here. Listen, friends, stay tuned. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the Donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
You've looked for the right school for your child, but what school? You've worked hard to instill right reason and the values that God has established, and yet you might be concerned not only with your child's school's quality of education, but by what they may be teaching, maybe undermining what you have worked so hard to instill. Perhaps St. Stanislaus Kostka School could be the positive answer to your questions. Academic excellence and Christ-centered values are the hallmarks of St. Stanislaus Kostka School. To find out what may be the best opportunity for your child, visit ststandschicago.org. That's ststandschicago.org. See the videos, see the students, and see what may be the best decision you can make for your child. Contact the school online or pick up the phone and call St. Stanislaus Kostka School to arrange for a visit at 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560.
Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being with us here to Wrinkle Your Brain. You know, I might have a subtitle for most of my Wednesday hours, because that subtitle might be the church-state relationship.
Hey, sounds good.
And I think that's just a dominant theme, and so much it's sort of an underlying theme, the relationship between the church and the state, and that brings us to the issue of religious tolerance. And I want to applaud Larry Schweikart for expressing the fact that America has helped in this regard, and we need to discuss it and defend it. But what it is and how to do it need to be a little tweaked, because I'm Catholic. And if you know a little bit about the history of the United States, Catholics were not tolerated in the public square, as it were. And now there's a unity. There's a unity forming between Christians and Catholics, and especially conservative Protestants and conservative Catholics. We find ourselves, I want to say to my Protestant brothers and sisters, you're beginning to sense what Catholics had to deal with in being second-class citizens, because sort of leftist progressivism, liberalism has taken over the public schools. And the public schools before were basically good Protestant public schools, which was good for America to the extent that Protestantism was good for America. And to the extent that Protestantism shares a lot with Catholicism, it was good for Catholicism too. But there are differences, there are distinctions. And that's why we wrinkle brains here, because we got to analyze those things. So before we go on a little bit more to the meditation here, another thing that Schweikart points out is that the Puritans, we all think of the Pilgrims and Thanksgiving coming to Massachusetts and all. Mm-hmm. And he praises the Puritans, and my hat is tipped to them, as well as anybody who risked their life going across the ocean in the 1700s. But Nick, can we do that 6 and 7? Let's do clip 6 and 7.
The most zealous of England's reformers were known as the Puritans, so-called because they wanted to purify the Church of England. Some of these Puritans became so disenchanted, they decided they had no choice but to leave England. Only in the new world of America, untainted by European prejudices, could they practice their Protestant Christianity in its purest form. We know these hardy souls as pilgrims.
Okay, let's stop
right
there.
Their religious background, these early settlers and those that followed were fiercely independent.
Okay, let's see there. I've listened to it enough times to explain what he is trying to explain. The Puritans, he's talking about them as the most zealous reformers. I want to give a caveat to that. They were zealous, but to say that they were the most zealous, I don't know. They were the most anti-joy, the most anti. Their zealousness was against enjoying of life, as it were. And the fact that they risked going across the ocean, which is admirable, as I say, can and should be compared to the early Christians who risked as well to establish Christianity. They were in a pagan world of the Roman Empire. And for those early Christians to stick their neck out was to have it chopped off. For the Puritans, they were sticking their heads off, sticking their heads out, and they were going to get their heads chopped off. But instead of submitting to that kind of cruel treatment, they got on a boat and escaped, which I don't blame them. I would have done the same thing. But to say that, to focus on this courage while ignoring the courage of the early Christians is a sad mistake of a good historian. Does that make any sense?
A little bit, yeah.
Because part of the pride, being proud of the Protestant roots of America, is in that they fixed something that went wrong in Europe. what went wrong in Europe, in their estimation, is Catholicism.
Hmm.
Catholicism went wrong. Protestantism fixed it. So now let's start over again with a new nation, not with Catholicism, but with Protestant Christianity, and then we will create the perfect society, as it were. So I'm going to continue with this little meditation, and we'll see where we go. Just raise your hand and stop me when it's necessary. This mode of thinking seems to be shared by the video's presenter, the great American history professor Larry Swihart. In addition to being a college professor, he's written many books about American history from our earliest days through the present. He's also a strong conservative. As such, he's done a great job in providing another side of American history that you don't hear from his academic colleagues, many of whom are dead set on proving that America is a racist, classist, sexist, dysphoria that requires radical transformation. Unfortunately, though, in explaining the development of religious tolerance in America, he ends up going a bit too far in painting the religious pluralism, a byproduct of the Protestant Reformation, as an unqualified good. And this attitude can then easily slip into religious relativism. It's your point, Tony. See, that's we're tracking in the same. Our brains are wrinkled with the same groove. It is an attitude about religion that many Americans of all political stripes have embraced because of our love of personal freedom. It's an attitude that I want to highlight and caution against in this video. So, here's, we don't have the, okay. The technical challenges continue over here, but what I'm challenged with is the idea of America. It seems that America is having technical difficulties because some of our founding principles are...
Isn't that true? That's a good way of putting it.
Are short-circuiting the hard drive. We all know how important a hard drive is. And, you know, I sometimes get criticized for being picky. And I know I don't want to be picky, but sometimes a detail is so important.
It's true.
You know what I mean? If you're an engineer, you understand that. Or if you're a doctor, you understand that. Mm-hmm. Here's a small little detail that will cause big problems. And what I'm saying is that we got to straighten out the proper relationship between church and state, because the principle of religious freedom as it was established in the United States had some mistakes in it. So I hope that makes some sense. So here we are. In this video, Larry Swihart's contention is that modern religious freedom was created in America and then it never existed anywhere else in the world before America invented it. And in the video, he traces the roots of that tolerance back to the Reformation. And here's the thing I got to turn upside down. I look at the Reformation and see it as an affront to religious freedom. Why? Because it yoked Christianity to the state. Mm-hmm. Or it made Christianity the servant of the state. And now even that little phrase, right? The servant of the state. You might say, well, what's wrong with that? It's good to serve.
Not the state.
Yeah, well, sometimes when you join the army, you are serving the state, right? When you pay your taxes, you are serving the state. And is the essence of Christianity to serve the state? You could say it needs to serve the state.
state,
but secondary.
It's secondary, or it's remember my seven circle sculpture, mm-hmm. Tony. Remember my set. This comes back to me over and over again.
It's in my mind.
Remember those of you who can picture it here on the radio. My sculpture of the seven covenants that we get from God through the scriptures and through the church is a series of, is like a pyramid.
It's like a combustional.
It's like a wedding cake. It's like
Christmas tree.
A Christmas tree.
Point.
The point is at the top.
Exactly.
It hangs from one string, mm-hmm. meaning our personal, individual relationship with God, one-on-one. Everything starts with me and God. But it doesn't stop there. It can't stop there. It shouldn't start there. Stop there. Mm-hmm. It often does stop there.
Yes, it does.
And if it does stop there, it's not true Christianity. So faith serves yourself. Faith serves your marriage. Faith serves your family. Faith serves your tribe. Faith serves your country.
Mm-hmm.
If it stops there,
we have issues.
It's not fully Christian. Because what if there were no conflicts between states, there would be no issue. Just as if there were no conflicts between husbands and wives, there would be no need for God's grace, mm-hmm. or God's wisdom. If there were no issues within a family, if there were no dysfunctional brothers and sisters or parents and children, you wouldn't need God's grace. So the relationship between the church and the state, it does, religion is supposed to serve the state, but what the Protestant Reformation established was the role of the religion is to serve the state. And why do I say that? Is because the Protestant Reformation broke away from basically Europe that had Catholicism as its Christian religion, but it needed the state. Soon as they started rebelling against the state, which was wedded to the church, remember, the emperors of the Holy Roman Empire had to take a vow to defend the Pope. They were in charge of the different nation states. But they were also supposed to defend Catholicism. So when Martin Luther and all the reformers started their reform, it became violent very quickly. And then, of course, who's going to stop? What, just like today, when there's violence, who do you call? You don't call the priest.
Nope.
You call the police. They both start with a P. I'll grant you that, but we're very different.
Priest is the last one you think of, I
imagine. When there's riots in the street, you call the police. Mm-hmm. And so in the Protestant Reformation time, as violence grew, you called the king who had control of what? An army. And then there were clashes. And then the Protestants said, well, you're not the only ones who can pick up arms. We could pick up our arms. We can form an army. And we'll fight you. And so they did. And that's part of the history of those fights that came about. And so, should we take a break now or so? We have some issues going on here, but you keep praying, we'll keep praying, I'll keep talking, and we'll
keep
make
going.
It through. Yeah, let's hope. Okay, so do you remember... Here's a little quiz. I think you were here on one of these Wednesdays when I was trying to wrinkle people's brains.
Let me see if I can get at this.
And I remember the emperor. Okay, I'll give you a real easy one. Charles the third, fourth, or fifth?
Fifth?
Very good.
Was that the guy with off with his head? Or his
yeah. Well, no, he did not get his
Queen
head chopped
Mother.
Off. Thank you. That was... This is right in the time of Martin Luther's Reformation time, so to speak. And There was a council. And I got to confess to you that I didn't know this council before I started reading more deeply into history, because I went through all years of seminary training and I never heard of the Council of Speyer.
Speyer.
Speyer. Remember that? Actually, there were two, at least two.
Is that with the Diet of Worms?
Exactly. Oh, excellent. Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, I remember this.
The Diet of Worms. Well, when you eat a plate of worms, you are definitely going to need a Speyer aspirin.
Right.
So this is the way you remember. This is how my mind works.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I cannot remember a lot of things.
Did they still make Sayer aspirin?
I'm gonna market them. I think.
Exactly.
One, after you eat your diet of worms, please take it's Speyer.
Speyer.
Speyer. It's the diet of Speyer. In the diet, here's what happened, and this is why I think the Protestant Reformation and religious tolerance in the United States got a wrong start. Because as the fights began, and it's ludicrous to think that the fights didn't happen in colonial America. They did, and they always will. That's why one of the reasons I like John Adams as one of the great founders, because he recognized that willy-nilly. He knew it was a part of reality. And in a certain sense, he knew that a strong federal government was needed to coordinate and be a referee when fights arise. Except he had a strong sense that, well, Protestantism is so strong and it unites people so well that there's not going to be huge issues of division within, because it's just common sense. Common sense was Christian ethics in John Adams' mind. But he thought, well, as things go, we will need a strong federal government to be an umpire when states clash and when denominations clash. He had a more realistic vision of the clashes that would begin between states. As a matter of fact, he even predicted the Civil War. He knew that the moral issue of slavery would surface, of course.
I mean, thinking about this now, how the founding fathers or even government back then was prepared to fight. I think today it's like we don't want to fight. We want it all to be okay.
Yeah.
Everything is relevant.
Right.
Unless it's something we want, and then...
You know what? And that's because the only form of fighting that people know of is physical fighting.
Exactly.
I'm a pretty spiritual guy, mm-hmm. and I see a lot of spiritual battles, and I'm a thinking kind of guy. I like to read and I like to philosophize.
Well, you're already disliked because most people don't do that. Most people don't do the thinking anymore.
No, and so what will help save us are intellectual battles. Mm-hmm. We need intellectual battles. And in a certain sense, those who can't battle intellectually need to stay out of the ring. Mm-hmm. If the only way you're going to fight is with your fists, then I would say stay out of the ring. But that's been an Achilles heel in the human race.
For so long.
Since Adam and Eve, you might say, and it's still around. So, but the diet of Speyer, let's get back to the diet of Speyer. The Emperor Charles V, he saw the battles going on between his nation states, because the ones that were going Protestant were still under his control, and the Catholics, who were not happy with the Protestant reforms, were calling upon their civil ruler, calling the police. And so he did. I'll just keep talking. There you go. Sorry. So the Diet of Speyer, the first one, the emperor thought he had a good idea. And the idea he came up with is, okay, some people are going to go with the Protestant way, some people are going to go the Catholic way. Whoever is the king or the chief magistrate of the area, that person gets to choose which religion the people will run with. He thought that was the only way to solve the problem. And he was Catholic. He's the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire.
You just wrinkled my brain, and, man.
Hey, there we go. We got our brain wrinkle again. Look at that.
You just wrinkled my brain.
We got something going.
It's reading my
Nick's
mind.
Fixed something. Very good. Should we do six or no? We did six already. We can do seven. No, eight. We'll do eight if
Flip
we get to
eight.
It. So.
True to their religious background,
okay, here we go.
These
here.
Early settlers and those that followed were fiercely independent. Given that the Puritans believed that people should read and interpret scripture for themselves, how could it be otherwise?
Yeah, okay, there's Larry Swihart explaining how the early colonists established within the new baby America this principle that was born in the Protestant Reformation, fiercely independent. And, you know, independence is good, but it's not an absolute virtue. This, one of the insights of Catholicism, my friends, is that, and I get this from G.K. Chesterton, I wish I could say that I thought of it myself, but hardly anything I share with you, my friends, is my own thinking. It's a process of absorbing other great thinkers. Maybe before I die, someday I'll have an original thought, and then I'll bring it here, okay? So, but G.K. Chesterton reminds us that we have to see virtues in relationship to other virtues. The virtue of independence is a virtue.
True.
But it's more important when it's in contrast to domination or slavery, mm-hmm. when you are being controlled. And order is also a virtue. Order and discipline and control are all virtues. Sometimes they are needed. And so independence is a virtue, but also order and control and unity and uniformity. Mm-hmm. There's a hard one. That was the famous act of uniformity was the act of Queen Elizabeth when she was the head of the Church of England, and she wanted to get rid of all Catholics. So for her, uniformity meant uniformity with the Protestant new denomination. And all Catholics either have to leave or submit their head for chopping it off, for chop blocking.
Chop block.
Chopping off. French did it too, you know, the same way. So I got to finish this. Nick, you want us to take us a break? Should we take a break?
That's for the head chopping right there.
Indeed.
Oh, no!
Let's take a break and then start anew.
Okay, let's take a break. And we've got to get the diet of what?
Worms?
No, after the worms? You need to take your aspirin?
The Sayer.
Spare.
Spare.
Not Bayer aspirin, but Spare aspirin, okay? Okay, well, stay tuned, friends, and I'll explain why the diet of Spare is so important, especially in trying to understand religious freedom in our world today. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've looked for the right school for your child. But what school? You've worked hard to instill right reason and the values that God has established. And yet, you might be concerned not only with your child's school's quality of education, but by what they may be teaching, maybe undermining what you have worked so hard to instill. Perhaps St. Stanislaus Kostka School could be the positive answer to your questions. Academic excellence and Christ-centered values are the hallmarks of St. Stanislaus Kostka School. To find out what may be the best opportunity for your child, visit ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org. See the videos, see the students, and see what may be the best decision you can make for your child. Contact the school online or pick up the phone and call St. Stanislaus Kostka School to arrange for a visit at 773 278
773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Married couples, I have good news for you. There are no such things as marriage problems. I am Father Thomas J. Lawyer with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. There are no marriage problems. There are only problems in knowing and living the theology of the body, which answers the question, why are we a man and why are we a woman? When we know this, we come to know our legitimate needs as man or woman, and marriage is all about meeting these legitimate needs. Remaining unaware of these needs is what begins the process of exchanging hurts, leading to strained relationship. A woman's greatest need is to be relationally fulfilled by knowing her husband is emotionally present to her. A man's greatest need is to know that his wife believes in him, that he is more than adequate, and that he has what it takes to be a man. Our legitimate needs as man and woman are revealed in the very language of our gendered bodies. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you. This is brain wrinkling time, and Tony, remind the listeners here, most people know of the Diet of Worms, I'm sure, all great students
of
his.
But alas, the Diet of Sayer.
But the Diet of Spare.
Gotta put that I keep saying Sayer. Spare.
Spare. You gotta
spare it.
Once you eat a plate of worms, you definitely need to take an aspirin.
A spare.
From the Diet of Spare. Okay? This is key. This is so key to understanding the issue of religious tolerance and why I'm criticizing Larry Swihart, who's a fellow conservative in many ways and loves this country. And I want to applaud and see, but there's a blemish that has to be fixed. And my brain was wrinkled during that last break because Nick was explaining some of the complicated things. And one of the things was it's updating. We all know what system update is, right?
Exactly.
You know, now some people might not know that, but give me an explanation. Tell the listeners what system updating means, Tony.
Any kind of system that needs an update. That's the best way to describe it.
Well, there you go.
Something that's, you know, okay, we have to update.
It's in computers.
Everything in computers. They get updated sometimes.
And you know what sometimes happens is you can set your computer to update automatically or manually, right?
And usually when you need it is when it's updated.
Yeah. Now, sometimes I do put automatic, and that's a very dangerous thing because now computers need updating. Because these are human inventions, right? And all these computers are little circuits and all these X's and ones and zeros and all the things that run, all the electrical things that run it.
Now I'm thinking Matrix.
That's right. He's the one. He's the one.
Update the Matrix.
So a computer system we know needs updating every now and then, and it's a pain in the neck. Mm-hmm. But we know that if we're going to make progress and we're going to continue on a good course, I always want to buy the new computer, don't you? You know,
yeah, I'm not a computer guy.
Oh, not too much. Okay, but you have a phone over there.
Right, which is a computer.
And a computer is a phone, or phone is a computer.
Now.
And so you need to upgrade, you know, and all this. But anyways, just as what happened to us, as the computers were updating themselves, it wrecked our show. It didn't wreck our show because we were here with this excellent brain-wrinkling commentary we have going on, but it caused great havoc. But what I'm trying to do to you, my friends, is... There's the frustration. And here I'm taking a wonderful theme of religious tolerance that all Americans think we are so on the board with. We all want it. We all think we know what it is, but I'm afraid we don't, my friends.
So you're basically giving us an update.
This is an update. We need to fix something, a glitch. We didn't even think of at the beginning when we started this wonderful land of ours, as it were. And the fix can be found in the Diet of Spare. Actually, the second Diet of Spare. Because, my friends, if you go back to the 1500s, and you can look it up. Don't take my word for it. You can see it there in the pages of history. Of course, a lot of history books will not even include the Diet of Speyer, but here's what happened. The areas that were being affected by the Protestant rebellion, Reformation, whatever you want to call it. I call it the rebellion. And the Catholics, they were both fighting each other, and they both took up arms, and they both were willing to fight. And so, but because the land was in the middle of the Holy Roman Empire, and there was still an emperor in charge of it, the Catholics called out for help, and the emperor tried to do what he could. You know, this is, my friends, at the same time the Muslims were coming from the south and trying to take over Europe. Same time. This is it. Happening in Germany was the Protestant Reformation. Happening in Poland and Hungary, Yugoslavia, that area, they were facing a different kind of problem, the Muslims coming up. And unfortunately, Charles V, the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, had to deal with both of them. He also had to deal with his Catholic friend to the north, Catholic France. And he also had to deal with his Pope friend. And the Pope was so concerned about the Papal States in the north of Italy that he didn't really want to worry about the Protestant Reformation, and he didn't even really want to worry about the Muslim invasion. He was just worried about Naples. I guess he thought it's one of the sadder chapters in papal history, as it were. But needless to say, here's what happened. The Holy Roman Empire says, here's how we're going to settle the disputes that are breaking out. Each magistrate, each king, each prince who's ever in charge of the town or the tribe or whatever will get to pick what religion, Catholic or Protestant. There were only two that he thought of at the time. And so pick one, and that's what you'll go with. And he thought that was a pretty good idea. And most people did think it was a pretty good idea. And notice how that is kind of what America thought. Because American colonists came over here and said, we're going to pick Protestantism. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave Catholicism aside. Little did they know that there are other religions. I mean, they must have known it, but they didn't consider that.
Think about it at that time.
Because, as I said, it was at the same time that Islamic armies were marching into Yugoslavia and Hungary and Poland. And all that. And so they were just thinking, the only religions that really count are the Christians. And we're reforming Christianity. We're battling the Catholics who have destroyed Christianity. And we're recreating Christianity in the right way. So I sympathize with Emperor Charles V in coming up with his idea. As a matter of fact, I got to give a shout out to one of my wonderful parishioners, Rachel, because she, the Latin phrase for what I'm talking about, where is it? I'm sure all Latin scholars are screaming at their radio right now. it means he who rules gets to pick the religion. Something like Eius Regio. Eius religionio, something like, my Latin is very poor. But he who rules gets to pick the religion. He thought that was a good solution. Except the Pope went and said, he heard about this, and he goes, wait a minute.
Hold on a second.
Hold on there, young fella. Warning. Because what does that, you might think, what is that going to do to the Catholics living in a country or a state?
It's all Protestant.
Danger, Will Robinson. Here? Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Exactly.
The door was locked. He couldn't get in.
That's right. We got that robot. I love that robot. You know? The Pope saw, in a great inspiration, even though I think he was one of the worst popes. That we had in that time, he ignored even Emperor Charles V's pleading, let's call the council to make reformations. There are a lot of corruptions going on. That's what Martin Luther is screaming. And the emperor is smart enough to say, yeah, and he's got some points there. Let's have a reformation council. Let's have a council to address these issues. It took 50 years and I think three popes later for the Council of Trent to be called. All that while dragging their feet and arguing. They argued about where they're going to have it. Mm-hmm. It was like proposed at three or four different places before it settled on the town called Trent. Could have been a town of, could have been the council of other areas. And the French king added to the problem because the French king's main purpose was to get what is now southern France. He wanted some of northern Spain and he wanted a lot of northern Italy.
He's a greedy guy, isn't
he? To be part of France. So he was fighting the emperor over those border wars. So the king of France went so far as to have meetings with the Muslims' army, the generals, the sultans. And he said, you join us in fighting against Emperor Charles V, and we'll make it worth your while. How sad that is.
That's pretty messed up.
That's enough for me not to eat any more French fries.
Yeah.
Right there. I already don't drink Sam Adams beer. You know that.
I'm done with the French.
And I like French fries, you know. And I like French toast.
Oh, French toast. Oh, I don't know about that, though.
I like escargot.
Escargot.
There is so much to love about the French culture, you know. But the very fact that the French kings were willing to join force, ask the Muslim sultans, who were dead set on taking over all of Europe. Sorry, King, I think it was Charles, Henry the First.
One of those Henrys.
Francis the First, Francis the Second, Henry the First, Henry the Second. It's next to impossible to remember all the numbers, let alone the names. But I think we can all remember that the Muslims were planning on taking over all of Europe. But the French didn't really think deeply enough. They didn't let their brains get wrinkled enough. Mm-hmm. All they wanted was to win what is now part of southern France, get some of what is now northern Spain, and get what is now part of northern Italy. So they let that kind of greed, non-philosophical causes. So the Council of Speyer, the second Council of Speyer, says, the Pope says to the emperor, who came up with this nice idea, he says, what about the Catholic's conscience? If you're in a minority, you don't get to live your nation. You don't get to pick your religion. In other words, the king will pick the religion for you. So you're back to either leave or get your head chopped off or convert. And so the United States, when we started this spirit of religious freedom, comes in and we say, hey, we're going to have religious tolerance. We're not going to have the king. We're not going to have a king. And the president and the government shall establish no religion. We will let the states decide. So it's kind of the same thing, except coming from a different angle. In Europe, they were upset that the king was going to establish the religion for the people. America comes along and says, no, let's get rid of kings. Let's have the people vote on the religion. And so the most popular religion of the people got to be the controlling religion of the state.
And like today, only some of the people vote, not everyone.
Yeah, that was always true. And what's insightful is when you are debating theological, religious issues, does majority rule get you the truth?
Good point.
Go back to the gospel and you find your answer. Majority rule doesn't get you the truth that is found in Christianity, in Jesus Christ. So, oh my goodness.
I've run out of time.
That's maybe a good way to end, I guess. So, because we turned it upside down. That's why my little sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
is so important. I turn the image of the church and truth upside down. So we'll have to come back to that. And we got to finish more of my meditation here. Next week, I'm going to hope to have a surprise for you. We're going to take a break from church-state relationships. I'm Father Tom Coase. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
To say when the world makes no sense, do we search deeper truths or sense?